Our world is magical. Games are magical. Open your eyes and prepare to discover how magic and games intersect.
Merry meet and welcome to Covenstead, a podcast about gaming and magic. Covenstead is brought to you by the co-creators of Ironbound, Guardians of Nirvala. Ironbound is a fantasy TTRPG about witches versus machines. Become one of the brave Ironbound and use your magic to defend Nirvala from the mechanized locust-like apothecary.
Well, I'm just going to wait to make sure that Kitty over here will stop meowing. And I think we're good. So now I'm going to pretend like we're recording so the cat will meow again. Here we go. And I'm talking. Okay, now we're good. Okay, here we go. So before we get into this, I want to kind of share a theory that I have, and it's about the board game Monopoly. And Okay. You got to bear with me on a little this, on how this will segue into our episode today. So as we all know, Monopoly is a game that you either love or hate, or love to hate or hate to love. And it's, you know, like it, the vicious circle of, you know, waiting until someone completely wipes the board with all of your corpses. But I have recently discovered that Monopoly, there's two sides to Monopoly. There was the original game designer's intent, and then there's the blurb, the packaging, the basically of how it's sold. And I've learned recently that they're actually two different things. So the game that we now know as Monopoly was actually originally created by a woman named Elizabeth McGee. Mm-hmm. And it was originally called the Landlord's Game.
Yep.
And if I recall, everything about the game mechanics wise and how it plays and everything is exactly as we know it. But the focus of the Landlord's Game was to teach people about the horrors of capitalism.
Yes.
Of how having people who can basically just squeeze money out of you is a terrible, terrible thing. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like a morality game, which used to exist quite a bit in the days when this was made. A lot of early board games were all about teaching proper morality and stuff. Mm-hmm. This game tried to go in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
But could never be sold until...
Do you remember the Game of Life?
Well, I do remember the Game of Life. Yes. I learned about all this from a documentary I watched recently called The Toys That Built America. And in that, they actually showed how the original version of the Game of Life had a space called Suicide. And there's a silhouette. Yes, I kid you not. There is a part where you could land on a space called Suicide and your character dies because they kill themselves. And there's a silhouette of a person hanging from a tree.
Oh my God, no.
Shit you not. And this is like in the 1920s or something like this. So needless to say, that's been changed since then. So yeah, so I
well, do remember we'll add the game a trigger onto this.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that, you know, warning, board game based suicidal ideation. It's like, that's rare.
Not only that, but that sounds kind of racist too.
Yeah, and I, you know what, and there, I'm sure that there's, I mean, like, that could be a completely different podcast, all completely unto itself, you know.
I know, right?
Board games from the last 100 years that are completely.
But anyway, that's wild. That's wild. Yeah. But when you're saying like morality and stuff, it made me think of the Game of Life. You know, you get a kid, you get a job.
Exactly.
You get married.
Yeah, all this kind of stuff. So the Landlord's Game was to try and go in kind of like the opposite direction of this, to kind of teach, you know, like the how something can be completely wrong by going through a simulation of it. And it's actually based on somebody named Henry George, who is basically kind of like an economic philanthropist, he says, struggling to speak. And so, I mean, like, it was all based on really something, but she couldn't sell the game as is. Eventually, she sold the game to Parker Brothers, who completely converted it to make it a game that was about the benefits of capitalism. Mm. The game itself still functions exactly the same, but the focus of the game was completely changed when it was packaged by the publisher. And so the reason why I find it to be really interesting, because now knowing that Monopoly was actually created as a warning about capitalism, because my wife loves to play the game. So every once in a while, I would reluctantly play. I'm way more inclined to play now, because now the game actually feels like it's working the way it's supposed to. You know, it always felt before as if like it's this just feels, you know, like so off and something's not right. I'm not enjoying myself. But now that I know that that's what the intent was of the game, I enjoy it a lot more. And so I have a theory that it's almost as if the only reason, like if Monopoly had actually been specifically made to be about the benefits of capitalism, and that was the intent from moment one, I don't think the message would resonate as hard as it does for me. So the way I look at it is that the best way to experience Monopoly is to think that it's a game, that it is pro-capitalism, when in fact it's anti-capitalism.
Right.
And that to me puts it on a whole completely different level. I have this vast amount of appreciation for the game now that I never had before.
Yeah, because, you know, what do you hear about Monopoly? Oh, like people get so mad at like split families and all this stuff and all, and, you know, and all of that. And when you think about it, if you know that's the purpose of the game, then that makes total sense. It's supposed to be frustrating for everybody else that doesn't have the money.
Right.
You know, it's supposed to be ridiculous and unfair and just absolutely frustrating. It is. That's the purpose, to show you what happens.
But if it was actually packaged that way, as that it's supposed to be this frustrating thing that pits players against each other and everything like that, I don't think that the game would have worked at all. I don't think we'd be talking about it now.
I was going to say, the game does have one thing. Everybody starts out on even keel. Like you get your initial, everybody gets the same initial starting money. Everybody gets the same initial stuff, which doesn't happen in real life. So, but even so, I mean, if it's frustrating that way, then if you actually start to factor in any disparities or whatever, then, you know, you've even got a more frustrating game.
Yeah. And in that way, it's like, it works even better towards the intent versus how, you know, like the elevator pitch of the game, you know? So that to me, it was just like, you know, I'm more fascinated than ever about it, just that entire concept. But the reason why I bring this up is because a designer's intent versus how something actually comes out and how it appears on the shelf and the blurb on the back of the box can be completely different. So today we are going to be dissecting the witch class from the Pathfinder RPG. And why I want to say that the game designer's intent versus the actual publication can be different is because it's very possible that the intent that went into creating this class was very, you know, beneficial, wanting to do something that is, you know, different, more respectful. But when it all ended up going through the editing process, the development process and everything, ended up changing, you know, to the current result that it is. So while it may seem like we're dumping on Pathfinder for about the next 50 minutes or so, it's definitely not the intent behind it. Because the last couple of episodes, we have been talking about, you know, stigma in both, you know, like the role-playing spheres and in Wicca and paganism. And also, too, about, you know, like the lack of proper representation in media and stuff. And so when I came across, I just started doing a search of just like, what games do actually have like a witch component or a class or a role or something in it? And this one came up. Pathfinder being one of the big RPGs in the sphere at the moment, that it just seemed like a really good opportunity for us to kind of go through this class. And like, I'm really curious to get your take on what they did that to you feels right, that feels accurate, more representational, and which just feels like the same crap that's been around for decades, mm-hmm. if not longer.
Right.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, because we haven't really gone into it before. Like, you know, we've glanced over everything, but we have not. So this is basically us kind of, you know,
real time reaction. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, like, so, well, so like I said, and I think it's one of those things I think it's important for us to clarify this before we really get going into this, because I don't want this to be something where we keep having to stipulate this over and over again. Whatever it is that you, audience member, likes to play, likes to appreciate and everything else like that, that's cool. To each their own. There, you know, like in this day and age, there are so many options out there that there's, you know, should be something for everybody. Mm-hmm. But at the same time too, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's the same for us. So while it may seem like, you know, we're shitting on your favorite thing, our intent is not to be shitting on your favorite thing.
Right.
But to be drawing attention to an issue of representation within a very particular demographic.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where this is their version of a witch, right? Which, you know, they may have just said, this is our version of a witch. We're not interested in making it like a real life witch at all. You know, and that's a choice that they make. And that's a valid choice, that saying, this is our version of what a witch is in Pathfinder. You know, it is what it is. That's what we call it. This is what this witch does in the game. And that's it. And we're not worried about what a real life witch, which is like a choice. I mean, people do that, especially with, like, you know, if you ever seen kind of fanciful historical movies that have historical figures in it, you know, like that Claire Danes Marie Antoinette movie, I think. Or something. Was it Claire Danes? No, it was
Kirsten Dunst.
Kirsten Dunst, right.
Yeah.
Like, they're not, you know, they're not worried about being accurate. They're just like, this is our version of Marie Antoinette, you know, and that's how I kind of look at this. Like, and I think I mentioned it back on the representation, like, not many go in for the, I kind of want to represent witches more accurately. You know, it's just kind of one of those where, you know, this is their version of a witch and I accept it as such, whether it's a movie or graphic novel or game or whatever. It's just kind of like, okay, this is what they're calling a witch and this is how a witch works. So, you know, I mean, that's just a choice. So we're not talking about, like, you know, they shouldn't have done this, that, or the other thing. It was obviously a choice, but we just wanted to talk about the differences and how it looks for Pathfinder.
Yeah, yeah. By basically giving an example of what is out there on the market and, you know, kind of dissecting everything from there. You know, just to kind of give a bit of a baseline so that if anyone is, you know, well, what's wrong with that, what they came up with? Kind of like, you know, when, as we've talked about on here before, when I first started realizing, oh, there are people who actually, you know, call themselves witches and live their lives as this, you know, like, I should find out a little bit more about that, because, you know, like, the last thing I want to do actively and willingly is to basically, you know, like, spit on someone's way of life from a piece of fiction mm-hmm. that I created. Yeah. And so that's what we're looking to do here. This cat's just going to keep on going. It's like every episode I'm going to have to create like a new warning. It's like, hi, oh, it's me again. So there's a cat in the background. This episode, they're repaving my street, you know. All this kind of stuff. Alrighty then.
Sorry, folks. We can't help the cat.
You know what?
Has an opinion.
Yeah, exactly. This actually just kind of seems very appropriate. It's a very Wiccan thing. There's a cat that's in the background and wants to be heard, of just like, I have opinions.
Yes. Cats. Yeah. So yeah, let's okay. So looking at this, let's just read the description here. This is from the Advanced Player's Guide, page 94.
Yes. And this is all coming from, this is all like open content. This is actually from the game system resource document. So this is not like we're reading copyrighted material or something. We are actually getting off this, and we'll have a link in the show notes from a site that's basically taking it directly from the book. So this is shareable material. There may be some other components that are more copyrighted, not included, but in general, you know, like this is information that we are allowed to share.
Yeah. Yeah. So this comes from the second edition Pathfinder and the Advanced Player's Guide. It says, witch. This is the witch class. You command powerful magic, not through study or devotion to any ideal, but as a vessel or agent for a mysterious otherworldly patron that even you don't entirely understand. This entity might be a covert divinity, a powerful fae, a manifestation of natural energies, an ancient spirit, or any other mighty supernatural being. But its nature is likely as much a mystery to you as it is to anyone else. Through a special familiar, your patron grants you versatile spells and powerful hexes to use as you see fit, though you're never certain if these gifts will end up serving your patron's larger plan.
Yeah, right off the bat, how does that actually strike you? So like if someone sent this to you to say, it's like, oh, here's something, maybe I'm going to be running Pathfinder. What do you think about playing this character? Reading that little intro there, what is your first initial impression of this? Are you looking forward to going further, or are you rolling your eyes at this point?
You know, I mean, like I said in the, you know, you're just so used to it, you know, like, it's like, yeah, okay.
You know, that's, okay, that's so like, it's the rolling your eyes. Okay.
Yeah. You know, it's like, all right. You command powerful magic, not through study or devotion to any ideal, but as a vessel or agent for a mysterious otherworldly patron, Vivian, you don't entirely understand. Not quite. I mean, not quite. I mean, we've talked about the difference, and we do talk about the difference between a witch and a Wiccan and a pagan. So, you know, a Wiccan is the religious aspect of it. Wicca is the, you know, the rituals celebrating the holidays. It's the spiritual path. Witchcraft is a practice that a lot of Wiccans do. Anyone can be a witch. Like, you don't have to follow Wicca to practice witchcraft and be a witch. And what witchcraft is basically using the energy of the universe and what's out there to affect change. And it does. You know, I mean, witches have different aspects on where that energy comes from. It comes from the divine, you know, or it comes from the universe. Could be one. Like, we're just taking the energy the universe already has and we're converting it. It's like, you know, the law of thermodynamics, you know, energy is not lost or destroyed. It's merely changed. And so a lot believe that that's what happens. You're taking energy that's in the world to be taken and converting it and focusing it towards something that you want. Okay. So like, let's say you need some money to come in for some reason, you know, you're trying to attract some finances for whatever reason and try to manifest that. So you kind of look and you take energy out and that's out in the universe that's free and won't harm anybody. And you take it and you focus it on attracting, you know, bringing money energy towards yourself, you know, and then something happens. You get a check you didn't expect. You get a refund you didn't expect. You all of a sudden get a freelance job that pays good, you know, whatever happens to be. But so in a way, that's kind of accurate. Kind of not really. I mean, yeah. Because other people believe that you're just taking the part of you that is a part of everything and using that and not really serving a deity or something separate from yourself so much, but more along the lines, because everything connects to everything else, you're using your natural energy that's inside of you that's connected to everything else to do something instead, which doesn't require a patron at all or deity at all. I mean, it's just your own energy and stuff there. So from a certain perspective, mysterious otherworldly patron that even you don't know. Well, I mean, nobody really understands deity, I guess. You know, you're just fumbling around. So I guess not. Entity might be a covert divinity, a powerful fae, a manifestation of natural energy and ancient spirit, or other mighty supernatural being. I mean.
Yeah, it almost seems to be kind of like, you know, Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I could see that if coming from a certain angle. I know the part that really kind of stuck out to me was, you know, an otherworldly patron that even you don't entirely understand.
That's what I'm trying to, you don't, it's divinity, but I think we have a.
Right. They're still kind of like, they're still like, if you were basically were using, you know, Hermes as your patron, there is at least some fundamental aspects. There's a particular reason why you chose Hermes. Now I could totally see someone who is almost kind of, you know, stumbled into it. It was just like, it was a sign of just like, I need to follow, you know, like Hermes. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. I need to figure this out. But, you know, like that still doesn't strike. Like, I feel like I could find out some information as kind of like, you know, what are the tent poles of Hermes as a patron that I need to look for and those kinds of things. You know, that's like saying, it's just like, oh, I'm a Pisces, but I have no clue what that means. And I have no resources available to find out.
It means you're sensitive.
That's what yeah.
Pisces is very much the sensitive water sign.
So, yeah, that was the part that I was curious to get your take on, the whole part of, you know, the otherworldly patron that even you don't entirely understand.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it kind of smacks of the deal with the devil kind of thing a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of.
It could go. The other thing about it, too, is that to me, that almost seemed very similar to the sorcerer class. I don't know if that's still the case in Pathfinder, but I know in Dungeons and Dragons, it used to be the sorcerer was not a spellcaster who got their knowledge through books or anything, but someone that had a natural aptitude, but they also had an otherworldly patron, you know, that basically guided them along this route. And that could be a demon or a devil or a whatever kind of stuff. The implication that it's kind of like darker magic. And when I saw this on there, it was just kind of like, you know, whoa, that kind of feels like they're still leaning in that direction. There's just, you know, like so far, it's just seemed like something else that's been done before, but with a dang change. You know, it's just like, we'll use witch. Yeah, witch is a good one. Yeah.
And then the last bit was through a special familiar, patron gets you versatile spells. Not all witches use a familiar.
Yeah.
I mean, some have them, but not all. I don't.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of sounds like it's necessary for this particular, for the Pathfinder witch to have. So that would be, I mean, it sounds necessary through, especially like that's how you communicate with your patron, you know?
Yeah.
Apparently according to this. So yeah. So that's, you know, not all witches have familiars. So this is very much the, you know, black cat on a broom sort of thing.
Right. Yeah. It's not outright saying it, but at the same time too, it's not making any effort to say, this is not what we're talking about. You know, that this is a connection to the animal world, to the natural world or anything else like this. This, you know, like, yeah, when I read it, it just kind of felt like that description could have been applied to any number of different classes and then just kind of build it up from there. You know, like, oh, we've got this great pitch for a class, but it's like, it doesn't quite work here. You know what? We don't have anything for the witch. Just slap it on the witch. You know, like, oh, okay, good. Yeah, you know?
Yeah. And like I said, it says through a special familiar patron grants you, like you have to have the familiar, and that's kind of what it works through, I guess. Like that's how you get your, which is not how a familiar works in actual witchcraft. I mean, if you're a witch and you have a familiar, they are like a magical aid. Think of it like a booster, like a protection kind of thing. It's nothing that you would like channel through your familiar to commune with a deity. They are like their energy is a magical assistance, like to help keep yourself safe and protected, and also add like a boost to your energy when you need it, that sort of thing. It's not really a channel for, I mean, I suppose you could if you really wanted to. I mean, if you wanted your DAB like through the animal and whatnot, I mean, I suppose you could, but I don't hear of that too often. I mean, usually I mean, because they're animals and their purpose is really, like I said, to add their energy to the protection and to add it like as a booster to whatever you're doing, that sort of thing. So,
yeah,
definitely not how it would be used. Definitely not as a as much of a pivotal factor as they kind of make it out here in a Pathfinder approach.
All right. So let's say then if we were going to start, you know, each of these little areas we get into, if it's going to be basically positive or negative, I think it's safe to say that right now we're starting off with negative, where it just kind of feels like, oh boy, here we go. Like it's not immediately saying that it's, you know, going to be different from what you expect of a witch class in a fantasy RPG. It seems to be kind of leaning in that direction or a little outside the box, but still leaning up against it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I would say witches do have patrons sometimes. I mean, not all the time. I mean, you don't need one to practice witchcraft, really.
Yeah. It's an option.
Some people, it's an option. So, I mean, that is a thing that happens. Some do have familiars. So, you know, I mean, sometimes those things are true and sometimes they are not. So there's that. And the patron can take many different forms as they kind of indicate, but you usually know what form it's going to take.
And you're not limited to one.
You know, right. Like, and you're not limited to just one.
Yeah.
I have two myself.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And those change over time. That's the other thing. Like in here, it kind of sounds like, you know, you have your patron and that's what, you know, you do. But in reality, you know, that sort of thing can change with time. You know, certain aspects of a patron or a divinity or whatever can be useful to you for a certain period of time for a certain purpose. And then it shifts and you don't happen to need whatever lesson that was teaching you anymore. And so things shift, you know, it's constantly changing.
Yeah.
So that can be something that changes over time. Sometimes not.
Yeah. There is a section here, a little sidebar called In Service to the Unknown, which basically is, you know, kind of quick little advices for making the witch's patron. And one of the things it says down here at the very bottom, which I think is important to point out, is that it does say every witch is different and no story is wrong so long as it's fun and engaging for everyone involved. Mm-hmm. So there is an open-endedness to this. The idea is because in an RPG in general, you do need to have some kind of framework so that you can mechanically link all the different elements together and then have them intersect and interact with other mechanical components of the game, which are other characters. I hate to tell everybody this, but your character is a mechanical component of a game. It's not a living, breathing person. It's just a bunch of numbers on a piece of paper. So in here, it does seem as if they're trying to say is like, you know, look, feel free, have some flexibility. These are general kind of guideposts. But at the same time too, some of the other, you know, kind of examples and stuff that it gives here in this little section at the same time too, doesn't really go far to, you know, like I said, kind of really stretch out the definition that was given before. You know, you still have a patron. There's no room to have multiple patrons or none at all or some kind of thing like this, you know, so.
Yeah, but it does say, interestingly enough, for a character who truly doesn't, so it starts out in Service of the Unknown. A witch's patron is a mysterious entity, rarely known or understood, even by the witch in that patron's service. The nature of the relationship between a witch and their patron can serve as details for character development and storytelling. When playing a witch, work with your GM to determine the nature of your patron and how much of that nature you know, both as a player and a character. There are countless ways to handle a witch's patron. The following are just a few approaches you might take. So this one I found interesting, the first one. For a character who truly doesn't know their patron, you might have your GM choose your patron's theme and which lessons your witch learns, as the patron determines what powers to bestow upon you as their emissary. And these can provide clues to your patron's nature. You could instead give your GM a list of lessons you like for your character and let the GM choose between them. representing a negotiation between your witch and the patron. I mean, interesting, because I was just talking about learning from your patron,
right,
and learning things. And that might shift over time. And it looks like they kind of talk about that here.
Okay.
You know, which is, and you're going to get to choose the form of your patron and everything like that. So that's, it's a good thing. I mean, I you know, it's you know, so far the biggest hurdle, I think, or the biggest difference between a Pathfinder witch and a real life witch is the fact that they kind of make it sound like you're in service of the deity,
like a sorcerer
servant. Yeah. And I've never really felt as the witch relationship to their patron was that it's more of a mutual, it's understanding and trying to put the pieces together of how to move through the world and everything like that. And it is a negotiation and a give and take, but you're not necessarily in the service of.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just never thought of it that way.
Yeah.
Like my patrons, like I'm not really in service to them. They watch over what I do and I learn from them and all this other stuff, but it doesn't really feel like a service kind of thing. You know, I do things in appreciation for the lessons and stuff that I've learned and things like that, you know? Giving thanks for what your patron teaches you and all of that, but it still doesn't feel like a service sort of thing. It just feels like a relationship, you know?
Yeah.
And not a relationship that's like a master-servant relationship, but a mutual pieces of the universe, coming together and trying to make things fit into the way they're supposed to and all of that, finding out about yourself and finding out about the world and all of that. So it's interesting that they had that.
Yeah.
That, you know, your lessons that your patron wants to learn and stuff like that.
Well, let's start getting into, because then there's some other details, you know, kind of like, you know, role-playing scenarios, like, you know, how a witch would handle themselves in a combat encounter or a social encounter, you know, and those kind of things. You know, there's also things like what your character might do. They might strive to learn more about your patron or familiar, your patron's goals, why they chose to empower you, et cetera, et cetera. Seek out new sources of magic, you know. And there's a few other kind of role-playing tips and everything that's in there. The next thing I wanted to get your take on is that this class has one of the class features are hexes. So I'm going to give what they have here under their key term sidebar. So a hex is a short-term effect generated on the fly from your patron's magic, requiring your familiar to draw from your patron. As such, you can only cast one spell with the hex trait per turn. Attempts to cast a second hex spell on the same turn fail, and the spell casting actions are lost. So the general term of a hex, pro or con for what we're talking about? Like I've heard that term used before with the Scarlet Witch, the character from the comics and now the movies. And
hexes.
Yeah. And to me, that term has always had a kind of satanic reference to it.
Yeah, it does. I mean, okay. So here's the deal. There are, I guess I'm going to put it this way. Did you ever see? Okay, so I'm gonna go back in a Wayback Machine. You ever see The Craft?
Never actually seen it. No, I'm aware of it. I used to work at video store. I'm aware of.
They did have it. Yeah, as Hollywood magic as it is, and we talked about this with Witches and Media. They did have a Wiccan consultant, and there are a lot of things in there that ring true in a sense. And at one point, the lady who owns the New Age occult bookstore that they go and get stuff from that they need. One of the girls asked her, you know, what do I do about about this evil magic and that's being released by my friend here or whatever, to sum it up. And the witch basically says, magic is neither good nor evil. It's a force of nature, and it's all in how you use it and where you take it. And so in this case, in terms of hexes, magic itself is not good or evil. Like taking energy and using it to focus, which is what witchcraft is a neutral action. It's what you're doing with it that really matters.
Yeah.
So, you know, whenever they say, they're dealing with dark magic, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's sort of like saying this river is evil because it's going to trample this village, you know, like, because it's going to flood out this village. Like, is the river's not evil. It's a force of nature. It's a river.
Yeah.
The problem is that the river was redirected to go through the village. Yeah. You know, that's the problem here. And so there are some practices where some they're called hexes, some curses, you know, I mean, we pick up the language as well, you know, sometimes. And some people don't even call it that because they truly believe in that neutrality of magic. So whatever you're doing is just what you're doing with it. So it's individual. Even as this thing says here at the bottom, each witch is different. Every witch is different. No story is wrong as long as it's fun and engaging for everyone involved. And that statement is true. Every witch is different. We're going to skip this story part of it because we're not talking about story right now. But in terms of every witch is different, that's true. Every witch has a different philosophy about how okay is it to do something where you're trying to stop somebody from doing something bad, or somebody did something bad and you want to hurry karma along a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a moral question. That's a moral question that the witch has to decide for themselves, because the magic itself, like I said, is neutral. It's a matter of what you're deciding to focus that energy on that's going to make the difference. So some do, some don't. You know, and most of us believe in the rule of three, whatever you put out will come back to thee. And it's a matter of if you justify that as I'm doing a good thing here, so I'm not going to get any karmic comeuppance for it. It's not going to come back to me.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just a law that we see every day as humans, you know, like, hey, you get up and you decide you're going to have a good day, you know, you just wake up in a good mood, so it colors your whole day. You wake up in a bad mood, so it colors your whole day. You know what I mean? It's kind of that same thing. Your intent and your coloring of it and how it all works out is part of what you have to decide. And as far as like karma goes, you know, what you go puts out, that's a law that we deal with. Like I said, you know, if you go in determined to have a good time, you're going to spread that, you know, and that's kind of what karma is. You know, you go in there with good intent, you go in there with all the proper protections and everything like that. And you're putting that good energy out there.
Yeah.
And some, you know, if you decide that you need to do something else, like, you know, that somebody's really hurting somebody and you need to do something about it, then you're sitting there thinking, yeah, you know, this energy needs to be out there, though. This needs to be taken care of. You know, it's just you're making that choice. It's not kind of a overarching choice. You know, every witch is making it for themselves in terms of if they want to go in that direction, or that's just against their principle, you know, to do that. I personally don't do that. I just think, you know, karma is karma. It doesn't need my help. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So I try to work on protecting myself and protecting people I care about and trying to mitigate damage. Maybe that's a bit pacifist of me, but that's, you know, the way I've always handled things. You know, I think wielding, you know, it's just like anything else that you're wielding. It's a responsibility. You know, you're waving a knife around, you're waving energy around, you're waving a gun around. You know, that's a responsibility to do what you feel is right in using that tool.
Yeah.
You know, using that thing, you know.
So, yeah. So the term hexes gives you this implication of, you know, like it's leaning on the evil side of things. that it's creating dark magic. Now, ironically enough, the description of what they are, you know, mechanically is completely different. And so this is, I think what I want to do is I'm going to read this part up, and then I want to kind of talk about how, you know, is that even a proper, you know, term to use for what they're applying here? Because it is totally possible that the terminology that you come up with something can actually be misleading and start to give an impression that it's supposed to work a certain way when in fact it does something opposite. Because it says here that hexes are a type of focus spell. It costs one focus point to cast a focus spell. You start with this, you have these points and everything else like this. So a hex is just the class-based term for what throughout the game is known as a focus spell, which, and focus spells are automatically heightened to half your level rounded up. So they're an enhancement of the character's existing spellcasting abilities. Mm-hmm. So it seems to me as if this is just a term for something that, you know, is found throughout the game, but for this particular class, they get referred to as hexes. Another class, mm-hmm. they might be known as a boon. Another class, they might be known as a blessing, you know, if they're more cleric-based or something like this. So then, if what they are is basically an enhancement, like from what I remember in the first edition of the game as like a meta magic feat, you know, like you have trained your character that your spells can go longer, further, stronger, faster. It's the $6 million man of spellcasting. So is the term hexes then the right term to use for something like this, you know, or is it just kind of like, you know, oh, it's a buzzword that's connected with witches. Let's use that term.
It sounds more like a buzzword to me. I mean, you can just have easily issue spells, you know. Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
you know, because to me, hex is like, you know, you're kind of trying to advance, like you're trying to like advance karma. You're trying to bring something not pleasant or bring back some sort of comeuppance for something another person is doing mainly.
Right.
Usually.
Right, right, right.
So in this case, it doesn't sound like it's that specific. I mean, it's just you learn the phase familiar hex, which you can cast as a reaction to protect your familiar from harm. So which would really be a hex, like protection isn't a hex in my book. You're using it to protect. That's karmically neutral, even karmically positive, you know.
So
they're kind of just using hexes interchangeably with spells, I think.
That's the part that I was curious about, was just like, you know, is it me just kind of bringing in my assumptions of the word into this, or, you know, like, or is this something where we're both thinking the same thing, which is, you know, hex doesn't necessarily seem like the most open-ended of terms to use. It once again, it seems to be leaning on the tropes, but trying to kind of keep things as, you know, like, well, they can be a hero too. And that's, to me, like, so far, it's how it's feeling like it's saying, is that they're adding on the little addendum at the end of the sentence, that the two is like, well, they also can be heroes. They're not just evil, you know? All right, so far it's not looking too good.
You know?
So yeah, like if you're a witch looking for a role playing game, this does not look like something that, you know, looks like you want to take on. You know,
if you want accuracy, I mean, like I said, I'm so used to it that it's just kind of like, okay, this is how Pathfinder witches are, and I'm just commenting on how similar it might be to a real witch, but.
Yep.
I mean, it's it, you know, you just consider, okay, this is what a Pathfinder witch does, and you know, I mean, but if you're looking for accurate or something that feels accurate, you know, this is media witch, if anything.
So, well, and the reason why it's relevant is because, you know, that's like we talked about before, it's about representation. And if you are completely glossing over something that is actually, you know, important to your audience or a segment of your audience out there, then it's kind of one of those things where you're either doing more harm than good, where you're perpetuating the stereotypes
Right.
Or, you know, like what it is that you're just, you know, it is one of those things where it is really important for people to be able to see a little bit of themselves in media and in culture. Mm-hmm. And when there is an attempt and it comes across as being half-assed or, oh, it's the same as all the other ones, it doesn't, mm-hmm. it makes it harder and harder to convince people. Like if you had never played role-playing games before, mm-hmm. and I knew you as a witch first, and I thought, you know what, Dani would make for an awesome role player. You're like, she's got a great imagination. She writes fiction and everything. You know, like, I'll bet you she could really get into this. You know, it would be hard for me to find the game that isn't going to just right away make you think, okay, no. Like, it's this is exactly mm-hmm. the kind of thing that I'm not looking to play. This is the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. You know, that would be the equivalent of, you open up a game of Pathfinder and there's the Christian class. And it's just like, you know, okay, once every 30 days, you've got to go around your neighborhood. You got to go door to door and you got to start handing out pamphlets. And it's just like, what? Mm-hmm. No, that's not what we do. That some people do that, but that's not the defining aspect of being a Christian.
Right.
But every single time you see Christianity represented in some kind of a game, you come across as being door-to-door salespeople, except you're selling religion instead of vacuum cleaners, mm-hmm. you know? And then eventually after a while, you're just like, to hell with this medium whatsoever, like nuts to them completely. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, my apathy is probably not the best thing, you know, just, you know, I mean, it's one of those things, I guess it just goes to show, you know, it's like you sit there and you're like, am I going to die on this hill or not?
Yeah.
You know, like, is it worth sitting there going, you know, and okay, you know, it's a witch, all right, you know, I'll deal with that, you know. I mean, it's true, it's just, you know, and I can't help it, that's just the way it is, you know, either you're going to be angry all the time, you know, or you're just kind of, all right, you know, yeah. and shrugging and then move on, you know. Because, you know, it is, you know, you got to pick your fight and be like, is this a fight I want to have right now? You know, is this something I want to argue about right now?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, and that, so on that note, there's a little bit more detail in here about patrons. Mm-hmm. More specifically, they actually, and on this site, they do have a list of different patron themes. So maybe, and you know, cause like I've started looking at these to kind of get an idea on the expectations that they have for, you know, the different patrons that you can create and the different ways that you can take these patrons. How about mm-hmm. we go through?
It even says, or perhaps multiple figures working in tandem, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Which is something I mentioned before, that you can have more than one. So it looks like, you know, they have that here too, that you could have more than one
okay
patron if you wanted to. It looks like they have that option.
Okay, good. Okay,
a patron might be a deity or demigod, a coven of powerful coven, like a whole coven of hags or something like that. Okay. A fey lord, an archdevil, or similarly powerful enemy, or perhaps multiple such figures working in tandem. As you gain more of your patron's power, you might learn more about who or what they are. Yeah.
Okay.
Certain combinations of themes. Yeah. And then it has patron themes.
Yeah. So let's get into those, actually. The first one I'm looking right here, Baba Yaga. Baba Yaga teaches you how to transfer spirits into objects and freeze your foes. A witch with Baba Yaga as their patron can choose an inanimate object as a familiar. If they do, they still can gain master abilities and some familiar abilities that don't require movement. The object familiar has no speeds, you know, et cetera, mechanical stuff. Okay, sure. I'm curious because I don't really know much about the story of Baba Yaga other than it's like a Russian fairy tale, if I remember correctly, about a witch mm-hmm. who basically... abducts children. That's my understanding about it. And Baba Yaga's hut, right. I remember from reading like in early editions of D&D, where it's like a house that actually has legs and it gets up and it moves around. Yeah.
Chicken legs.
Yeah, it's a house with chicken legs and everything like that. Yeah.
And then they kind of get more open. They got like curse next.
Yeah, foiling foes and undermining those who stand in your way are the tools of the curse patrons. There's the fate theme. Through your patron, you gain glimpses of the future and insight into the ever-woven tapestry of time. Okay. There's fervor. Your patron represents a grand ideal or goal, granting you magic to further their mission and bring others to the cause. Okie doke. There's the mosquito witch. Few in Shimmerford or anywhere or elsewhere would be foolish enough to attempt to draw the mosquito witch's attention. But whether you're one of those foolish few or simply someone who attracted the mosquito witch's attention unwittingly or unwillingly, she grants you powers over insects and other arthropods. Okie doke. There's also night. Your patron speaks from the shadows, granting you power over darkness and dreams. There's the rune theme. Your patron is one of symbols, tomes and texts, words and wisdom. There's wild. The wild places of the world feel the touch of your patron. And there's winter. Your patron reflects the frozen reaches of the world, bitterly cruel to those who underestimate that power. Mm-hmm. And that's the list.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like it's pretty like customizable, though. Like you could say, oh, I want summer and not winter. And then you would go and look and figure out, okay, what spell list would that be from then? That I can pick from? Would that be primal, arcane, occult, patron skill, nature, you know? And then you would hex, cantrip, and a granted spell that would have to do with summer, I guess.
Yeah.
Like if you had some kind of like heat spell or light spell or something like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it looks like, you know, as long as you can pick the four things, your the spell list, the patron skill, the hex, and the granted spell. So it looks like they do kind of make a little bit of a difference then, looking at this, because they have hex and then spell.
Yeah, because like I said, the hexes seem to be kind of like, you know, more feat-based. They're enhancements, you know, or bonus spells or some kind of thing like this. So, but I mean, for the most part, from what I'm seeing here, they basically just appear to be another form of magic. So you do hexes and you do spells. Rather than, you know, like one or the other exclusively, or just calling spells hexes and everything else like that. But so, yeah, I mean, at the same time, too, when I look at this kind of stuff, I mean, like there are some in here in particular that just really kind of like the use of Baba Yaga, you know, kind of comes across as we might as well give the witch from Hansel and Gretel in here, you know, like, you know, from a North American European standpoint. Yeah.
Because let's see, I mean, it's interesting because it's supposed to be like fantasy, right?
Yeah.
Like it's Pathfinder.
Yeah.
So why would you throw Baba Yaga, which is like from our world, at a very specific place? And I don't know. It's just not something I would do. I mean, I would continue with the other theme, you know, curse, fate, fervor, mosquito, you know, that sort of stuff, because it's not specific to like our world necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then there's one, I've never heard of this one before. So I'm assuming that it's something that's Pathfinder specific, and that's the mosquito witch. You know, but
Monsters of Myth, it says page 75. So it looks like it's
okay. So there we go. A
monster you can look up in one of the Pathfinder
books. I see. But there's also too, there's a curse theme. The fervor one, and that's the one we're granting you magic to further the patron's mission or goal. You know, that one seems a little kind of, that one seems like it's being wedged in, you know, like taking a square peg and fitting it into a circular hole.
Right. Because if you're going to do that, I mean, why not be a paladin?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, isn't that, don't those things kind of exist already? And like that analogy of the square peg circular hole, that analogy is really starting to feel more and more like it just kind of feels like someone was tasked with coming up with a witch class, and 2 pages into the Google search and their research is done. And now it's just like, you know, standard trope, which I have been guilty of myself, you know? So, I mean, it's not like, you know, like I'm not trying to give shame to say is like, you know, come on, everybody, you could all do a better job. It's just like, no, it happens, you know, but I'm not seeing anything with this that really makes me feel like, oh, okay, this feels like a different way to play the game. This feels like, and this was one of the things that, you know, my own personal take on quite a bit of fantasy gaming is there's all these different options and different types of characters that you can play and stuff like this. But in so many cases, I find their abilities all seem to overlap. And then it just gets to a while, like even too, like I've been going through and looking at the different abilities that you get as you go up in level. And it's just more feats. Oh, here's some witch feats. So, you know, feats specifically for witches. Okay. You know, get skill increases, more feats, you know, magical fortitude, which is a term that you see in a few other expert spell cluster. Other classes have that. Lightning reflexes, seen that a bunch of cases. I think that's a rogue thing, if I'm not mistaken. You know, like it really does seem to be a lot of the same old, until you get to level 19, which is the patron's gift. Your patron grants you the power to command incredible works of magic. You gain a single 10th level spell slot and can prepare a spell in that slot using witch spell casting. Unlike with other spell slots, these spell slots cannot be used for abilities that let you cast spells without expending spell slots, blah, 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 blah. So you get a 10th level spell. But you know what I mean? Which I'm sure there's another class that has something similar to that.
Right, right, yeah.
So this to me is kind of feeling like it's just kind of wedging itself in there. You know? It's like, oh, you know, someone was playing Scrabble and the word witch came up on the board and someone's like, that's a great name for a class. And they wrote it down and got to it a couple weeks later. You know? Right. So.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in agreement. I mean, what's the, you have to sit and ask yourself, what's the appeal of playing a witch?
Yeah.
That you can't get from another class, like what makes them different?
This feels like, you know, a lot of other players, GMs and everything like that could kind of hack this together themselves, grabbing bits and pieces found throughout all the other books and everything. And then if that's the case, you know, so then it comes down for me, it comes down to the question of, is something like this actually doing more harm than good? Because it's not showcasing what's possible by having a witch class in any way, shape or form. Like I don't even get a really good solid impression that this is like an evil class, like an anti-paladin class, you know, that will maybe possibly align themselves with heroic people. You know, they might want to go stop the evil sorcerer for their own reasons, but they'll work together with others. I don't get any kind of impression one way or the other than, you know, you could copy paste this entire thing and replace witch with some other name and it'll work fine. You know, there's nothing inherently unique about it.
Right.
It's like, right. Yeah, you feel the same way?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, what's the appeal of playing a witch rather than a paladin with a patron?
Yeah.
Or, you know, anything else, you know, so yeah, I mean, it's a Pathfinder witch, I guess, you know, that's,
yeah,
and at the end, you know, that's what it is. And they have some little tiny bits and pieces that I thought were interesting that they put in there, letting the player kind of figure out what their patron, who their patron is and what they want or not, or having multiple. It was kind of interesting. I thought that was pretty cool. And that might be a little bit of a difference. I mean, a paladin can't have more than one, I don't think. So maybe there's a little bit of difference there, but I mean, yeah, overall, you know, I mean, it's a typical, I mean, it's a good example of the typical type of like which class you'd see in the game that isn't focused on that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, which, I mean, it is unfortunate, but I think it also kind of gets down to, I guess, the overall theme. Like, if this is part three of a trilogy of episodes focusing on this theme of representation, I think the thing that we can walk away from with is that sense of, you know, it feels kind of meager, where it's just, mm-hmm. you know, it's a witch in name only. And so by that same token too, to me, that just kind of represents one of the struggles the industry still has, in the sense of like, what other forms of representation where there is a growing demand, how much is also just being like, you know, pushed off to the side and ignored mm-hmm. and everything like that. Mm-hmm. You know, so that, you know, unless you're someone who's looking to play the same olds, you know, like mm-hmm. nothing new is being done. Nothing mm-hmm. interesting compared to what already existed 5 to 10 years ago. We're just using slightly mm-hmm. different mechanics.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Which, yeah. you know, it doesn't do any, like, for any listeners of our show here that are not into RPGs and thinking about getting into it, this episode is definitely not doing anything to encourage, you know, like there's games out there, don't worry, you know, like it's just like, yeah, okay, well, we picked like the most recognizable one we could find that had some kind of witch reference to it, and mm-hmm. there it yeah. is, you know, so.
There it is, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Just interesting, you know, what people end up doing with these sorts of things and how it works out. But yeah.
So yeah, well, I was gonna say, like, you know, let's try and go and end this on something a little bit more kind of upbeat, or, you know, like more kind of like, you know, where the possibilities and everything could be. So if we got, you know, if Paizo, the publisher of Pathfinder, came to us, they had heard this episode and they said, all right, smart guys, what would you do to make a witch class for our game? And we had two things that we could change. What would those two things be that could at least make this feel like it's a more promising turn in that direction?
Well, that's a good question.
I like asking good questions.
Oh, yes. Strong question. Love that. Okay.
It buys me more time to think of another good question, Ashley.
Yeah. No, I think the first thing I would say is I think it would be interesting to take a witch class. Like, if Pathfinder came, I would say something like, why not make the witch more connected to what's going on in the environment? Mm. Why not have their skills and some of their spells and things like that, have it be more focused on figuring out what's happening around them and being able to use that information, like, you know, the weather or the forest or the surrounding nature, like they know about it and are connected to it, and make it a lot more druid like I guess.
Yeah I was thinking that too, almost kind of like, you know, like a companion piece to the druid, but the druid focusing more on the transforming into animals, you know, on more of the polymorphing aspects of things. You know, a druid is in touch with nature, becomes one with them, talks to other animals, talks to trees and everything else like this. Whereas the witch is someone who has taken on a more kind of arcane approach, mm-hmm. connected with nature, you know, the druid being more divine, they are the ones who actually, you know, have direct influence and communication with nature. And a witch is someone who has learned and taught themselves how to, kind of thing. But yeah, that's the mm-hmm. thing I was thinking is, you know, almost like this version that they have here very much feels like, you know, they were basically trying to come up with an alternative to a wizard that's still a wizard. Whereas, you know, I think, you know, if we were to make recommendations, I think one of the first things we would do is to say, it's like, no, start looking at them being closer to a druid than a wizard, you know, mm-hmm. where they have an affiliation with nature in some way, shape, or form. I would even go so far as to, you know, like scrap the patron part completely and have it where it's like, you know, what aspect of nature is it that they have more direct influence on? What is it, you know, like, it, are they witches who communicate with animals more? Are they witches who are attached to a particular environment? Are they, you know, like a desert witch? Are they, you know, an ice witch or some kind of thing like that? Yeah. And give them those kind of choices that can then help define the kinds of spells and other kind of abilities that they can mm-hmm. get from there.
Yeah, and you can have like a kitchen witch, perhaps, who, you know, focuses on like they make things that give, you know, I mean, and their abilities, I would say, would be more along the lines of like boons and assists and things like that,
yeah.
rather than like direct things. You know, you're doing things to help your companions. You're using like your connection to whatever's around you to give them like the boost that they need to do what they need to do, that sort of stuff, probably.
Yeah, almost too, like in a lot of games, and I imagine the case being here with Pathfinder Second Edition, but it's like a lot of what bards can do and their spells and everything are more about helping others to overcome problems or to give them a boost with their own actions. Mm-hmm. You know, so I mean, something to that effect where they, you know, kind of play a bit of a support structure in everything. They don't have like this direct access, this direct, you know, changes like, I'm going to actually launch a fireball. It's like, no, I'm going to take that fire over there in the fireplace and I'm going to have that move across the room, like manipulating mm-hmm. elements of nature that already exist rather than creating things from scratch, so to speak.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, like, you know, right away, those two seem like the ones that could actually make something that feels a little bit more of like the, you know, right. the witches that exist in the real world who could look at this and say, yeah. it's like, oh, okay, either they, you know, maybe the person who made this is a witch or knows witches or has at least done some work to try and say, there are people out there who practice witchcraft and we want to do something to encourage them to come in and play the game mm-hmm. rather than just kind of, you know, like put on a good face, slap on a fresh coat of paint onto something that's kind of old and rusty. That's yeah, how this yeah. is kind of feeling yeah. to me, very bluntly speaking.
Yeah. And since, you know, witchcraft is not, you know, a lot of witches use a lot of natural stuff too, but since witchcraft is witchcraft, if you can also keep it as like the choices that they make and stuff too, in terms of as long as the witch is like focusing on the connection between what they're working with and like what they can do with it, I think you're good. I mean, you can even have a witch who focuses on like gemstones or a witch who focuses on books, or a witch who focuses on animals, or a witch who focuses on a, you know, a home, like building a city, you know, I mean, cause there, you don't have, I mean, you can go nature with it, but that's not necessarily have to, mm-hmm. as long as you have like the connection portion of it, correct. Like the witch strives to make connection between themselves and other things in the universe and uses that energy to do things.
Yeah.
I think you're good. So you could even take it, you know, there's plenty of books about urban witches, you know, witches who live in cities. So they don't have access to a lot of, you know, nature most of the time.
Yeah.
But they're still witches. They still use the energy around them. So as long as you have your witch kind of using the energy around them and their environment, whatever they happen to be in, and specialize, because witches specialize. So you know, you could have a witch who's like, yeah, I just focus on like gemstones and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I carry stones with me that are charged with different things. And you know, if I pick up a new one or something like that, you know, they all have different effects, you know, or yeah. I mean, as long as you have that connection and whatever the witch can do is kind of connected to what the environment they grew up in, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, wait, listening to you say that, I can't help but think that that would be really neat if this version of the witch is someone who can basically use other energies that exist around them. So, you know, if an enemy casts, you know, like a very aggressive spell, the witch can actually try to subdue it and to bring it down, or to enhance it, you know, work with the magic that is around them and manipulate. They don't control it, they don't make it, but they can alter it, and they can get a better understanding of it and those kind of things. I think that could be a really interesting approach.
That would be really cool, because that's that there are several things that witches do that are like that.
We
do a lot of that in our spells, you know, taking like, you know, one good example is like, let's say you're really angry about something and you have all this anger, right? And you have it in your anger and it needs to go somewhere. It's energy that you've generated. You've generated all this angry energy and it needs to go somewhere. And you're a witch. So you come up with a spell to take that angry energy that you have and shift it into something else.
Yeah.
Or bad energy that you feels like coming at you and shifting it. That would be really good.
Yeah.
That they have this ability to kind of take energy, shift it, you know, like neutralize almost, or change it to their advantage. That would be really cool.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's a focus of a lot of the other classes. I'm not as familiar with Pathfinder as I want to be, but I think it would definitely be something that would be unique.
Yeah. And I think that's the main thing is, you know, like if you're going to do something like this, and I think with anything, you know, if you're going to come up with any kind of new class or something like that, give it something that's truly unique and not just, we're just going to tweak this little thing here. They're going to be like this class, but with this one little adjustment right here, you know, like to give something completely different so that it's worth kind of, you know, like investing in this character and going off in a whole direction. You know, so, right. You know,
right. Yeah. Because when you make a class, when you're trying to make something like that for a player to choose from, with every single one that you're doing, you want the player to go like, that's cool. I want to be able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what you want with every one. I mean, you should focus on with every class that you have, focus on making it exciting. Like, what's so special about being a paladin? What's so special about being a warrior? What's so special about being a wizard? What's so special about, you know, being a rogue? You know, and you want to make it sound like, oh, you'll be able to do this and you'll be able to do that. And you'll be the other thing and nobody else can do that and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, yeah, I want to choose that, you know, or maybe I want that. You know, you want them to be excited about the possibilities that are there. So with a witch, you'd want to lay that out and say, you know, do you want to have, you know, a special connection with the things around you? Do you want to be able to dissuade attacks on you and shift those things to your benefit? You know, do you want to, you know, that sort of stuff and make it sound like, yeah, that sounds cool. You know, like just take stuff and throw it right back at him. You know, like that sounds really cool. You know? So you got to make it something where somebody reads it and goes, yeah, I want to play that. That sounds really cool.
And the way you put it there is just like something that no one else can do. You know, mm-hmm. It's like that, you know, that this class is unique because it does this unlike any other class.
Right.
You know,
if you're not this, you can't do that.
Yeah,
you
know, exactly. Like, and even then too, that, you know, like it's, I want a character that can help everyone else in the party. Well, we've got three or four different ways that you can do that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, all right. Well, I think we've busted this game's chops enough. But it is one of those things.
It was a good discussion. Yeah. And like we said, you know, that it's a Pathfinder witch. That's the way it is, you know? And, you know, so it's just like, that's the way they chose to go with it. It's a fictional type of witch in a game that you can play. And we're, you know, it's a thought exercise. It's not a bashing exercise. It's a thought exercise about what you want to be thinking about. What's the differences, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. It's also too, it's not something that is inherently evil. Like, you know, you sniff the paper and it's just like, whoa, this character class is like nothing but evil. This is the anti-paladin of the group, but sign me up, you know? It's kind of like saying that, you know, like all rogues pick other, you know, other PCs' pockets. Like, nope, that's a way that you can go if you want to, but it's not a requirement. Right. So, and that was why I really wanted to discuss this, because it was kind of like, well, you know, it's not quite what I was suspecting, but at the same time too, it also doesn't feel like it's, you know, traveled further down the path and kind of learned something from the path. So it's a start. And now it's a question of, you know, like, where do things go from here? I think it'd be really great if we, you know, could actually discuss a game. I have heard recently, since we last recorded, that there is an old game from the 90s called Witchcraft. I'm very curious to find out about it. In fact, I'm even going to write this down, you know, and then maybe a good episode to do would be to talk about, maybe to kind of do like a bit of a review, a discussion about a game that apparently is specifically all about that, you know? All righty then. So that is, yeah, I guess we've done enough damage here, I guess, for one.
was it by CJ Carella?
Not a clue. I know that name sounds familiar. It's possible.
Witchcraft, or more informally, Witchcraft, is a modern horror role-playing game published by Eden Studios, Inc. in 1999. Oh. Unisystem Game System.
Eden Studios. I think they're still around today.
You can get it on DriveThruRPG.
Yeah. All righty then. You know what? Yeah. All right. Let's make that something that we'll work on.
Yeah. Retro RPG. I think that's the one you're looking at.
Yeah. Okay. All righty then. Well, you know what? Because then now I'm really curious to see, you know, how an entire game about witchcraft is shaped, you know, how they run the mechanics and everything else like that. Like, I'm very curious to see that. So we will.
The witches of old must walk the earth again to battle the enemy or die trying. The age of innocence is over. It says it's a tagline.
Okay.
All right.
Color me interested then. See, and that's what we're talking about. Just that little, you know, that little tagline right there is just kind of, whoop, little light bulbs are clicking out over our heads.
Yeah. So. Yeah, cool. I'm for it.
All right. I'm done. We will do all that in a future episode then.
All right. Well, thank you. Do drop any questions y'all have or any thoughts you have about what we're talking about. And we will talk to y'all next time. May you have a little bit of gaming in your magic and a little bit of magic in your gaming.
Bye, everybody.
The Covenstead podcast was created and produced by Danielle Delisle and Todd Crapper. Theme music written and composed by John Thompson from the Rook and Rask channel on Twitch. Definitely check them out. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.